Good afternoon. This is Sheriff Ozzy Knezovich with the Sheriff's Report. Today we're going to talk about a topic that I think I've talked about for almost a decade. I know I've talked about it for almost a decade because I'm starting my second decade talking about it. Today we're going to talk about the Spokane County Jail, the criminal justice system, and the efforts that we're going through right now, again, to figure out what is the right process and what is the right size of jail and what is the right criminal justice methods to solve the issues that we're facing. Because quite frankly, if we don't figure this out, we're going to continue to release people that should not be released back into the streets, and we're not going to hold them accountable. With me in studio today, I have Jackie Van Wormer. And Jackie, I'm going to let you talk to the folks about your new position, how that kind of came about, and you know, what your job duties are in reference to this project, because quite frankly, you are the driving force right now in coordination and everything and trying to get all the cats herded in the right direction.
Yes. Thank you, Sheriff, and good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the program. So like the Sheriff said, I'm Jackie Van Wormer. I am the Spokane Regional Criminal Justice Administrator. So this is a new position to the community. I am funded by both the city of Spokane and the county. And the role of a criminal justice administrator, these are newer positions across the country. I actually have lots of colleagues in similar positions in other states and in King County and other counties here in Washington. And there's been a significant emphasis on criminal justice reform over the last decade, as the sheriff was talking about, but really also kind of hitting an intensity over the past 5 years. And for the listeners, I'm sure you see this on various media reports about that we can't arrest our way out of our crime problem and that our prisons are overcrowded, that we incarcerate over 2.3 million individuals a year in prison, the highest incarceration rate of any industrialized community or country in the world. And the question is, who's in our jails and who's in our prisons? And there's just a lot of emphasis on creating effective and efficient systems. And so my position within the city and county, again, it is a regional position, and I'm charged with not only working with all the various elected officials and different departments to create these efficiencies, but to really use data and research to tell us what is going to work best to make sure, again, like the sheriff said, that we have the right people in our local jail, that our courts are most effective and efficient, and that we're making sure that the right people are getting the right types of sentences coming through the court system. So the position is very data-driven. We're using a lot of data now, which I think is good for the community. So they can actually, it's very tangible, and they can really take a good hard look at what we're doing.
Very good. You know, on the way down, we were talking, and you mentioned that it might be a good thing for me to kind of give a little bit of the history.
Absolutely.
Behind the project. And, you know, the history goes back quite a ways. The Spokane County Jail has been overcrowded since 1995. In 1995, they identified that there were 577 inmates on average daily population in the Spokane County Jail, in a facility that was built for 464 inmates. It was designed to be a direct supervision jail. And for those of you who don't maybe not understand what a direct supervision jail is, it means that the inmates are out on the floors rather than locked in their cells all the time. There's a communication back and forth with the corrections officers. It actually helps the jail run more smoothly, and it helps the jail run a lot less conflict and violence inside the facilities. The problem is direct supervision jails are also more manpower intensive. So when in 1995, when they identified the problem, they had a real problem because they didn't have enough staff to continue running a direct supervision jail. They didn't have enough bed space for the overcrowding. And in 1997, Geiger Corrections became the overflow for the Spokane County Jail. Geiger Corrections was never designed to be a jail. Geiger Corrections is basically, post-World War II, early Cold War era army barracks from the old Geiger Field. And that was decommissioned. And that facility is dangerous. I make no bones about that. That facility is outdated, was never again designed to be a jail. And throughout the course of the last 20-plus years now, 21 to be exact, when you start talking about 1995 being the catalyst year, you have to take a look at the fact that the facility itself is approaching 70 years old out at Geiger. So we have this dynamic that over the years we started putting higher and higher classification inmates out at Geiger. And that's based on risk. And when I talk about classification, you have low risk, moderate risk, and high risk. We were at one point putting roughly high medium risk out at Geiger. And Geiger's population became, on average, anywhere from 5 to 10% gang members, which is very dangerous, especially out at Geiger, because there's no way to segregate effectively. We have the same issue in the jail. The jail population at one point was anywhere from 15 to 25% gang population. So all these drivers of the facilities not being able to handle the situation, the jail infrastructure not being able to handle the situation, and then you combine that with the criminal justice system not having effective means to adequately segregate people into classifications. Pretrial services, you know, Jackie, is the backbone mm-hmm. of that, and we'll get into why that is. But that is one of the things that we're looking at is we need a 24/7 pretrial service, mm-hmm. and if we don't get that, we'll never be able to move beyond where we are. So this project and process, you know, there have been in 1998, people ran for sheriff on building a new jail. In 2005, as the former sheriff was getting ready to go out of office, they started the process again as far as we need to build a new jail. I started working on that prior to becoming sheriff because if I was going to run for sheriff, I figured I better understand that process. So from 2005 to 2016, I've been part of that actual process. And I've watched many iterations of what we're doing. And, one of the things that Judge White and Judge Marino, very good partners in this effort, very good leaders in this effort, wanted to get the Law and Justice Council back together. And we worked very diligently trying to get that done. In 2013, when I went to the Board of County Commissioners and said, you know, look, we need to do something different here because what we have is the city of Spokane playing you against me, and, you know, either they're going to go to Benton County or they're not going to go to Benton County, and all that's designed to try to get the best rates they can, and it's not effective. I cannot set a clear vision for this jail. Because, one, they're using you and I against each other, board. And, two, you're not funding me in a way that I can actually set a goal and a path. So I said, what we need to do is get everybody with skin in the game. And the only way that happens is you bring the Law and Justice Council back together, and everybody's at the seat. Everybody has equal voice at the seat. But the law says, and this is law, folks, this should have been going for a long time. The law says the Criminal Justice Council is supposed to set the direction for the jail. So, board, I'm going to relinquish control of the jail to you, so it's one elected entity rather than two trying to run it, and we have to bring the council together and move this project and this forward. So that's the genesis, really, of, you know, Judge White came and said, we need to get this done. Judge Marino and I worked on it, and it took me going, I'm done trying to fight multiple parties. Let's get it together and let's get it done. And in order to wipe out all this nonsense about the sheriff's empire building and everything else, board, you run the jail. So the Law and Justice Council, very key aspect. Why don't you talk a little bit about what is going on with the Law and Justice Council right
Absolutely.
now?
Absolutely. So building off of your request to the board, and it was also called out in what we call the Blueprint for Reform, which was an independent study of our local criminal justice systems. Three individuals, retired Judge Murphy, retired U.S. Attorney General Jim McDivitt, and Phil Wetzel, spent over 300 hours worth of time investigating our local system, holding public meetings with all of the departments and department heads to collect information. And they published in December of 2013 the Blueprint for Reform. And so not only had the sheriff been calling for the recreation or the establishment of the Law and Justice Council, but the blueprint called it out as well. And so that was one of my first duties, was to assist all the elected officials and department heads in getting that Law and Justice Council back up and running. And so we have been meeting. It'll in August of this year, it'll be 2 years that we've had that board back in existence. And the sheriff is right in that one of the primary duties of that board is to oversee and provide input about the jail and jail operations and, of course, the criminal justice system in general.
And, Jackie, I want to reinforce that this is by RCW, folks.
Absolutely.
These are guidelines, state law. And, you know, some of the weaknesses that we suffer as a system is because we didn't have this council up and running. Mm-hmm. And from what I was – the history of that is you couldn't get all the players to play well in the sandbox, so they just quit playing. They dissolved it. And that put us in this position of never-ending turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
Law and Justice Council – effective management of jail population. Go into what does that really mean? Because we hear it a lot at the meetings, but I don't think the citizens really get, okay, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
What are they trying to do? Are they just releasing everybody?
Right, yeah.
You know, nobody's staying in jail anymore, because I hear that.
Sure.
Every speaking engagement I do is, Sheriff,
I hear it as well.
Why can't these major players that you keep arresting stay in jail?
Absolutely, right. So, Sheriff, let me just share with the listeners real quick about the board.
Yep.
There's 22 individuals on this board. So, and again, they represent all of the major elected offices. We have the sheriff, of course. We have the police chief. We have the elected county prosecutor. We have the city prosecutor. We have judges from all three courts, from municipal, district, and superior court. We have the juvenile court administrator. And we have actually two community members that serve on that board, as well as an individual from the business community, which is currently the CEO of Providence Healthcare Systems. So it's nice to have that diverse board. But they are required to really think about our jail and our jail population. And it's an area that many jurisdictions are sort of starting to take a look at. So our jails have become very overcrowded, and the question is, who is in our jails, right? And we want to make sure that we have bed space available for when the sheriff's department arrests that individual on the 36th felony for a property crime, that they can get booked into jail, right? So we want the right people in jail at the right time. And so when your jail is overcrowded with individuals that maybe have their, as the sheriff talked about, when you're thinking about jail classification, individuals are either low, moderate, or high risk. We know that individuals are also, that are criminally involved, are also low, moderate, or high risk to reoffend, or they're low, moderate, or high risk for failure to appear. So those are two of the things that we're trying to look at through what we call a risk assessment that jails can now use, and that pretrial services, which is a very important component and backbone of the criminal justice system, which I can expand on for the listeners. But thinking jails and pretrial services across the country are adopting what are called risk need responsivity tools. And these are scientific tools that use a formula that pulls on the offender's past criminal history, their warrants, failure to appear information, housing, employment, and drug and alcohol and mental health needs, and it assigns a score for this individual. So historically, the system has been the judge will sit in the courtroom as that individual comes in for first appearance after they've been arrested, and try to shift through all this paperwork, really, and look through old files and read the current charges and decide if this individual should be held or not in the jail pending their trial or their case. This tool actually will assign a score, and it will make the decision-making much better. And these tools are what we call they're very accurate. They have a high validity, which means that we know with almost, in some of these tools, almost 80% accuracy that we can predict whether or not this individual is likely to reappear for court or if they're high risk. And that's very important for the community. Again, this isn't a get out of jail free card. It really is making sure that we have those high risk individuals being held, and that if someone is considered lower risk, maybe that's the kind of individual that got picked up on a theft third charge, but has a job and has a place to live, and so would be considered less risky and could remain in the community while pending that charge. And then that frees up the bed for the more high-risk individual.
You know, you and I have talked, and there's a lot of jurisdictions around the country that are looking at cite-and-release type methods of dealing with some of these lower offenses. And what that means, folks, is they receive a citation, a ticket, to appear on the charge rather than be arrested, booked into jail, and things like that. The thing that I found when I came to work in Spokane County 20 years ago, was we've been doing that since 1996. There are things that I've worked in other agencies. Mm-hmm. I lateral to Spokane County from Olympia, and we arrested people for some of the things that we're simply giving tickets for.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back in 1996. Mm-hmm. How would we expand upon that when, you know, you mentioned third-degree assault? I can assure you, people with third-degree assault charges are generally not being arrested unless there's some other component that drove that to that side of it. So knowing that this community has been doing basically cite and release for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
How do we map forward on that one?
How do we expand?
Yep.
Well, again, I think you have to be cautious about the types of charges that we're looking at, right? And using the data to really hone in on, is there a population that could still be targeted that maybe we're missing? And I would say, Sheriff, too, that, you know, unless we have the right resources in the community to support some of these individuals on that cite and release, because those are individuals that many times are in need of drug and alcohol treatment or mental health treatment, and that's where the process sort of can fall apart. So the cite and release, we want to make sure that we have services in the community for these individuals to access, because that's oftentimes some of the underlying driver, you know, of those charges. So I think we just need to be very careful about the types of charges and using the data to drive in a little bit more on where we might be able to target.
Let's talk a little bit about something you just mentioned. And it's something that you and I have talked about in the past. And that's the outside sources, the drug and alcohol treatment, the mental health treatment. Folks, this is going to be a two-part program, so you're going to catch the next part of this next weekend. But we need to talk about certain aspects of that. And when we take a look at the services, mental health services, Dr. Van Wormer, there are 48, and I'm being generous at that number, 48 beds for mental health issues in Spokane County, a county of 480,000 people. That's one of our downfalls, is we don't really have the outside systems to link people into. And, that is truly one of my major concerns, is when we're mapping these things forward, we need to have that infrastructure to help negate the behaviors that are putting people in jail.
Absolutely.
And, folks, we'll continue this discussion again next week. I don't want to leave this radio program without mentioning something before we close today, and that is what happened in Orlando, Florida. That extreme tragic situation. Many people lost their lives. And my thoughts and prayers go out to the people of Orlando, just as they did for San Bernardino. And the list is getting a little bit too long to mention anymore, because these type of attacks, they haven't really garnered the same amount of public outcry or public attention in the media, but I can tell you there have been many, many police officers attacked over the last 2 years by the same type of people that attacked the people in that nightclub in Florida. People motivated by an ideology of hate, of people that are at war with this country. And I think it's time for the citizens of the United States to start demanding a little bit more of our elected officials, rather than using these things as a political tool to beat each other up over. I think it's more important for them to find a solution to end this problem, because we should not be facing this type of attack here in the United States. And you've heard me talk about it over the course of this last week. Some people say, Sheriff, what did you mean when you said that Congress needs to declare a war on ISIS? That's exactly what I meant. Congress needs to declare a war on ISIS. They declared war on us. ISIS is a nation. We may not want to recognize them as a nation, but they have carved out their own state, if you will. It involves part of Syria, part of Iraq. They're running it as their own country. That country has declared war on the United States, and it's time to eliminate that threat. Radical Islam is a threat to the entire world. Muslims from across the world recognize that. They recognize it, and they are fighting against it. Egypt has been at war with ISIS for several years now, and they've asked for help. It's time for us to get in the game, and it's time for us to end this situation, because until that happens, we will face these threats here in the homeland. We will face that threat here on American soil, because as long as you have that standard to rally around, as long as you have that aspect to command, that command and control aspect, you're always going to have the ability to have these attacks coordinated and inspired. And if you have a hard time putting that together, just look back a few years and take a look at what happened when we left Afghanistan and the Taliban took control, formed a government that spawned their terrorist attack on 9/11. They had a home base. They had it time to plan and control. And when we started taking the war to them, we didn't have those attacks. We haven't had attacks in the United States until we stopped taking the fight to them. So it's time for us to really consider what we're doing here and realize they've declared war. This is a war, folks. That's how they're fighting this. And until Congress and the President quit arguing about things and quit using this as a political hot potato, we're going to face that problem. The President said in a speech, if Congress really wants this to end, they need to declare war. Well, Congress, you need to do your job, protect the homeland, declare war, and end this. We should have done it when ISIS burnt to death, and I watched that video, folks, a Jordanian fighter pilot. They put him in a cage, they poured gas all over him, lit it on fire. It was the most barbaric thing I have ever seen. I've never seen anything like that before, and that's who we are dealing with. The fact they targeted a gay nightclub, they've been throwing homosexuals off of buildings in Iraq. This needs to end. And where's our responsibility, and where's the world's responsibility to protect the people of the world against this type of barbarism? So when people ask me, what did I mean? I meant exactly what I said. It's time for Congress and the President to really take a look at how we're going to protect this country, because sadly, men and women that hold my type of position, sheriffs and chiefs, are responsible to protect the people of this country. And when these attacks happen, it is going to be our personnel that have to go into that breach and defend and protect our nation. Police officers are at the front line of this. It's time to take the fight back to them. Make sure that they don't have that command and control structure, that flag to rally around, and to end this threat to the United States. Folks, this is Sheriff Ozzie Knezovich. Thank you for listening here on KTW, the Fabulous 630. We'll talk to you next week. We're going to continue the jail discussion. Thank you.